Americas, live and underway here on ESPN+. Another day down at the 2022 World Cup, and six of the eight quarterfinalists are now set here in Qatar. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebi Salazar. Herc, as always, a pleasure to be with you. What you wearing there?
Oh, you know, Il Femminino.
Wow.
Why am I so low? I feel very Sebi Salazar.
Oh, there it is. Not even
there.
Shorter. I got the beautiful kit here from our guy, Gabaldon Art. Check him out on Instagram. He's a big fan of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
He sent you that?
Yeah, he's made some cool sketches of Football Americas, too. So maybe we'll have to commission a piece.
He sent you that?
Look at that.
Where's mine?
Well, dude, you know, the people love me, Herc. What can I say?
I don't know.
A ver, mira. Wow, what a beauty. So we had some fitness issues on yesterday's show.
Have you
had a good stretch? You had a time to get yourself right?
I don't work out, so I'm fine.
Wow, look at that.
I don't. You're the guy who's always active and doing things, and
well,
I don't know why you're out here playing football against people way above your level, trying to punch above your weight. Like you're
well, to be fair, it's not very hard to punch above my weight.
There's all 40 kilos.
Yes, there's not much meat on these bones. All right, so we got a lot coming up in today's show. We're going to recap today's action, of course, Brazil-South Korea, which just wrapped up. Going to be talking Japan and Croatia as well, which went to penalty kicks. Fun segment coming up in about 10-15 minutes. Julian Laurent, Nader Manu are going to stop by. So that's England versus France. We'll be previewing that quarterfinal, which, of course, is coming up on Saturday. And as always here on Football Americas, we will be taking your questions here towards the end of the show. But
yes,
why don't we kick off with something...
I got to get it.
That we actually, Herc, discussed on yesterday's show. Those who saw the show yesterday will remember that we brought you a letter from Tata Martino. Of course, this was part of an exercise by our colleagues over at ESPN Deportes. They spent some time with the Mexican national team in the immediate build-up to the World Cup. And they had each player, and Martino as well, fill out a letter to themselves that they would then be able to read afterwards. We showed you Tata's letter last night. It got me fired up. It got you fired up. Now we have in our possession whose letter?
Edson Alvarez.
All right, Herc, you've got it in your hands. Why don't you read it, and we'll do a quick translation.
Who I have called the best defensive midfielder in all of CONCACAF.
Yes, high praise considering the other defensive midfielders like Tyler Adams.
Yeah, well, let's see if I still feel the same way after this World Cup.
Or after this letter. Wow, this is so dramatic. This is like the reveal. Who's going to host the next World Cup?
And he writes it in big letters.
Okay, I like that.
Quédate tranquilo que lucharon y se entregaron hasta el final. Nunca renuncies.
Okay,
and
so
then
quick,
he signs it, number four.
Yep, show him. So the quick translation there is keep calm, don't worry, don't stress. You fought and gave it your all until the very end. Never give up. So this has caused a lot of controversy with our colleagues over on ESPN Deportes. What's your interpretation of it? Because I feel like with each of these letters, a lot of this is left ultimately to the interpretation of the person reading
it. Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I'm really interested in your opinion on this. Like, really. Because it's funny. Everybody has a different interpretation of these letters.
Yeah.
And we didn't get a chance to talk about it in the production meeting, but I got the sense like you were itching. So I'm really curious here.
Well, I actually disagree kind of with what I felt like was the general consensus on ESPN Deportes, which is that this is a defeatist attitude, right? That he was effectively, before the World Cup, preparing for a bad World Cup. I think it's a player who is putting down what he knows of himself. So as to say, whatever happens in this World Cup, I'm proud of you, me, right? He's writing it to himself, for never giving up, for giving it your all, and for fighting till the very end. I think that's really what I'm seeing. What are you seeing, and what have you, our colleagues over on ESPN Deportes made of it? Because there is some anger about it.
Our colleagues over at ESPN Deportes,
they're killing them for it.
It's a very defeatist mentality.
That's the right word, right? Defeatist.
The mentality is like you're already going in expecting travesty, expecting a failure. To be quite honest, with the context surrounding Edson Alvarez, I get the notion for the Mexican national team of us versus them, them being the press. They really feel like the press and the public, the fans, are against them. We've heard it throughout World Cup qualifying. Héctor Herrera, el Estadio Azteca ya no pesa. La gente no nos ayuda. You know, Estadio Azteca is no longer this fortress.
Yep.
The people don't help us. It's this us versus them mentality. And I think this is him saying in his mind, don't worry about them. Forget them.
Hmm.
Quédate tranquilo. You stay calm. You stay true to yourself. You gave it your all. He knew that no matter what would happen, there would be this type of response against him, against Tata Martino, against the Mexican national team. What I don't think he knew, and this is where I'm going to give him a little credit, is that a player before the World Cup who was going around $50 million for Chelsea, mm-hmm. Manchester United was also a target with Erik ten Hag, an ex-coach of his. No, not a rumor. It was an actual bid, producer. This.
I'm glad I'm not the bad guy for once.
This right here tells me he had no idea of the way he would be blindsided by Tata Martino. Mm.
That's interesting. So you're saying the us versus them, and you're painting the them as the Mexican public and press.
Fans and press. I don't want to say public, say fans. Okay? Because you have to be very specific.
Okay. Okay. I guess when I say public, I mean soccer fans, right?
No, not these guys. These guys mean their fans. They're hardcore fans who come to the games. So it's not public. They're not talking about the casuals. They're talking about the people who pay that money to come see them in Estadio Azteca. So we want to make that very clear because there's a clear division to those guys. There's a clear line that's been drawn. Us, them.
So the more I think about it, because let's go down this defeatist route, that interpretation. I'm actually thinking that them might not be outside. It might be inside. And it may be very pointedly at Tata Martino. Because if it is defeatist, as you say, is he foreseeing the failure of the national team as a whole? What did we hear in the build-up to this from Tata Martino?
Explain that one more time. The them is, you saying he's including Tata Martino?
Yeah, and let me get to it.
Okay.
Right? So before the tournament, we hear from Tata Martino that this negativity that exists around the Mexican national team, I think the exact, you know, interpretation of it was, it's from the locker room doors outward,
right?
Not necessarily
right.
Inward.
Right.
I'm wondering if there's a combination here for Edson, if we are going down the route of defeatism, that one, he did, and maybe others within that locker room did actually sense that the wheels were coming off the wagon before this thing. And specifically, what was talked about a lot in the build-up to the World Cup, and I actually on this show kind of laughed at your suggestion of it, which was clearly wrong. I see that now. That
my suggestion?
Laughing at your suggestion.
What was it?
That Edson would not be an obvious starter for this team because that idea started to percolate maybe a month
was
out.
Wasn't my suggestion.
No.
Right.
But a month out of the World Cup, we started to hear these rumors that Tata Martino might consider a lineup where Edson Álvarez wasn't a starter. And so I wonder if he's thinking, and again, let's put into the context who Edson is. He's a guy who has gone on camera and said, I wanted to go to Chelsea. So he thinks he's that player, whether other people think that or not. And then all of a sudden, with a month leading into what is his World Cup,
His World Cup.
The rumors, the talk around it is this guy's not even going to be starting for his national team. I think maybe if we are seeing it as defeatist, he was sensing some of that and saying, hey, the them is maybe some of it to your point outside the locker room. There's also a them inside this locker room who's about to turn on me.
Can I give you some more context there? 2018 was not a very good World Cup for Edson Álvarez. I understand he was young.
Yeah, and he played out of position.
Okay. But he had la espinita clavada. He had that like...
Yes. When you have a bad World Cup and you get another shot, redemption.
Yeah, he had that redemption he wanted to get going this World Cup. There was one game circled on that calendar. He knew the world would be watching.
Of course.
Argentina.
Of course.
He doesn't get that game. This is why I'm saying I thought he was blindsided. Even though the talk was about, hey, they're seriously considering not playing Edson and playing more of a ball-handling midfielder. Never did we think would be against Argentina. We assumed that would be against Poland. We assumed that might be against Saudi Arabia, but never against Argentina. You needed that six there. You need that D mid. You need that guy who's
a rock
protecting that back line. That wasn't the case. So this, to me, not only do I feel he sensed it, but I also feel it's like his way of saying, it's not your fault.
Right.
It's out of your hands.
And if he wanted the move to Chelsea or Manchester United or whatever that next big move, there was no better showcase game than Argentina. And I mentioned this before on the show. I had a conversation with Mauricio Imai, our colleague over at ESPN Deportes, who saw the practices immediately after the Argentina match and said Edson, along with Jorge Sanchez, who didn't play against Argentina, were off to the side, you know, kind of moping. Really quickly, if you had been asked to do this, would you have written honestly knowing that the world would see it? Because I think, you know, I don't keep a journal or a diary. I kind of wish I did. But if it's only for you, you write something. When it's for everybody else, do you write for that audience? And then do we always have to take these kind of with a grain of salt?
If it's overly optimistic, take it with a grain of salt. But knowing that you're at such a large network like ESPN and the whole world would see this.
It's going to color how you
millions write. Millions and millions of people in our international television in Mexico, in the United States, in Central America are going to see what you put down, which you can't. What you can't do is, one, take the mickey and just put anything down, and two, come out with a defeatist mentality or defeatist kind of anything that would
that could be interpreted
that way. You have to go, you have to be over the top to make your intentions clear. And we're finding a lot of times with these players, it's not. So maybe they're really putting down what they feel. And that is, man, leading into the biggest moment of your life, that is crazy to me that you would come in with this type of attitude.
So Edson wrote that before the World Cup. We are now starting to hear from Mexican internationals after the World Cup. Let's listen in now to some very interesting comments from Jesús Gallardo.
Sí, como te digo, son muchísimas cosas que tienen que cambiar, muchas cosas que hay que mejorar en el fútbol mexicano, en todos, no solamente los directivos, sino como te digo, también los jugadores, a veces también cambiar muchas cosas, la manera de ver el fútbol, la manera de jugar los partidos aquí en la liga. Como te digo, a veces nos relajamos, entonces creo que no solo es cambiar ellos, sino también cambiar nosotros los jugadores para todos los partidos jugarlos al 100% y estar, no sé, concentrados para que podamos, tengamos más oportunidades de salir a Europa. Bueno, creo que depende de uno, la verdad, creo que si uno a veces quiere salir a Europa, creo que a veces igual hay varios casos que se ha tocado pelear con los directivos o no sé, para que se puedan ir a Europa, porque a veces es el sueño de un jugador ir para allá a tener esa bonita experiencia que es jugar en Europa, obviamente para competir en el máximo nivel como se dice, pero también creo que depende de uno estar al 100% aquí en la liga, hacer las cosas bien. A veces uno en la liga, no sé, como que se relaja y no da su 100%, pero a veces creo que también depende de uno que dé su 100% en cada partido, en cada juego que le toque aquí en la Liga MX para que no se relaje y tenga muchas oportunidades para poder salir a Europa.
Okay, Herc. Something, nothing, or everything. Gallardo's comments, specifically for me, what's most interesting is the relaxed comments about play in Liga MX. What do you make of it?
Listen, it's obviously something. But it's something we already knew. Like, he's not telling us anything we didn't know. It's coming to light right now, or people are making more of a deal of it than they normally would because it's coming off of a fracaso.
Right. Do you think the level...
Gallardo's 28 years old.
Yeah. Do you think the level in Liga MX is too relaxed?
Of course it is.
Yeah. Why specifically?
It and it's not as relaxed off the field because you can get crushed in the press.
Yes, of course.
Okay?
La exigencia, the expectations of the people in the press is high.
But when you talk about being laxed, how many teams can qualify for playoffs?
12 of 18. 2/3 of the league. It's
a joke.
So
you can throw away over half the season and still go in. And now you're going to say, well, that's the same pace, or excuse me, thing in other places like Major League Soccer. I'm not trying to tell you Major League Soccer is a barometer.
And we talk about that all the time with MLS. There are so many games that don't have that urgency.
And he talks about how relaxed it can be. The reality is in Mexican football, with the amount of foreign players that are in Mexican football, Mexican players of quality are very valuable.
Right.
Like, they're going to make a lot of money and sometimes not to play. So Jesús Gallardo, the same Jesús Gallardo who spent half the season riding the bench with Monterrey.
Yeah.
The same Jesús Gallardo who wasn't playing well for the majority of the cycle, who I think actually had a very good World Cup for him.
Right.
Like, I thought he was
for
one of the better...
For your pre-tournament expectations.
One of the better players for Mexico. Doesn't mean that he had a great World Cup, but I thought he was one of the better players for Mexico. This is what you've been breeding in. This is what you've been training in. This is the atmosphere you've been...
There's not a better example of kind of the point that Gallardo's making than Gallardo himself.
Right.
He lost his job at club level and kept his spot in the national team. And that's more about the national team than Liga MX.
And not only did he lose his... This is the crazy thing. You could say, well, he lost his club. He lost his position at the club level to a foreign player who's just a better player.
No, it was Eric Aguirre. Yeah, yeah.
It was another Mexican player. So you've got to take what he's saying with a grain of salt. But there is a lot of truth to it.
Right.
But it's not something that are now coming to discover. Listen, Alexis Vega is a great player. Very good player. Interesting traits. How old is he? 25. Yeah. At that age, you should already be in Europe.
Of course, if you're a real
And that's what
talent.
I think Gallardo's trying to get at.
Right.
It's hard for these players to go to Europe. Well, I understand that the clubs make it very difficult on you, but you also make it very difficult on you. The player also makes it very difficult on you. Until the Mexican players realize, or until the Mexican, I guess, just environment realizes, the federation, that the best players are in Europe and you need to be with those players in order to get better, you're just going to keep seeing more of this.
We talk about the complacency. It's down to 12 of 18 going to the playoffs. We've also talked about it. There is no more relegation, so there's not that urgency for teams at the bottom of the table. Before we move on to the U.S., just real quickly here for some context, we are calling this the worst World Cup for Mexico of the modern era.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, until you go back to the 90s, 1998, every single player on the roster was Liga MX with the exception of Jorge Campos. 2022, there are 16 Liga MX players of the 26. I'll make it 17 because HH in MLS kind of feels the
transition
same.
Transition year, sure.
Last time around, 2018, only 9 Liga MX players. 2014, 15 of the 23 were Liga MX, but 8 were in Europe, and those 8 were clear starters, right? So I think there's a point to be made there. When you lean on a domestic league, as this roster clearly was built off the domestic league, and the domestic league is lacking at least on-field exigencia, demand, the level drops. And I think we see that reflected in the performance, again, what very much feels like the worst performance for Mexico in the modern era. We're going back to 1994. All right, let's change topics, and we'll talk about the U.S. men's national team, who are now, 48 hours removed from the game against the Dutch that saw them bounced in the round of 16. Specifically, we're focused on the work of Matt Turner, who started all four games here at the World Cup. Had 2 clean sheets, one against England, one against Iran. He conceded 0 goals from the run of play during the group stage. The only goal, of course, that penalty against Wales and Gareth Bale. He did concede 3 against Netherlands. Did make 4 saves against the Dutch, though, in that 3-1 defeat. All right, Herc, so there were questions ahead of the World Cup as to who the U.S. number one was. Did Matt Turner answer those questions? Is he now the no-doubt number one for this U.S. team moving forward?
You know, I've been very critical of Greg Berhalter for the performance.
For everything.
No, I gave him a lot of credit in the group phase.
Okay.
But I've been very critical of Greg Berhalter and the majority of his tenure with the U.S. men's national team. Few things that I've given him a lot of credit for. His work with dual nationals, his ability to only play with young players, getting a lot of those players, older players, out of that locker room, and really
the rejuvenation of the national team.
Yeah, having confidence in those players. There's one thing that I have to give him a lot of credit for. You know, I'm a huge believer in Zach Steffen. I thought Zach Steffen was the number one goalkeeper for this U.S. men's national team. But the decision to leave Zach Steffen off of this roster solidified Matt Turner mentally, gave him that peace of mind, because Matt Turner was on this very program and Matt Turner said, listen, the most important games, Mexico in Cincinnati, Mexico away, Costa Rica. Greg Berhalter went with Zach Steffen. He made it very clear to me by his actions. So Greg Berhalter leaving Zach Steffen off of this roster, I feel, gave Matt Turner the peace of mind to know that he was the clear number one, and Matt Turner responded.
Yeah. So Berhalter actually used the word with us, hierarchy, in terms of the goalie position, that he felt like he had a nice hierarchy. That was, for us, very much, if you read between the lines, he says, I don't want Matt Turner or anybody else on this team to have doubts. And then when you put further context on it, which is the long-standing relationship, not just with the national team, but going back to Columbus Crew days, between Berhalter and Steffen, that must have been just an awful decision to take on a personal level. So I think it is very much a big decision that Berhalter takes, one that not only we have to give him credit for because it was tough, but because in the end it works out. Do you think Turner is going to be the starter in 2026, or do you see either one of the guys that was on this roster, we'll throw Zach Steffen in, competing, or maybe even like a Gaga Slonina, or you feel pretty confident about Turner? And I'll follow that up with this. Zach Steffen lost his stranglehold on the number one spot because he wasn't playing every week. If we look at Matt Turner's situation, barring injury, you don't really see him. I don't want to say ever, but it's unlikely he would become the number one at Arsenal.
It is unlikely. He's earned the right to be the number one right now to lose that. It's his to lose.
Okay.
I don't see anybody on this roster overtaking him,
okay,
on this current World Cup crop overtaking him. Gagas Lonin is a very interesting player.
Yep.
A very interesting situation. We've seen what can happen to players who go to Chelsea at an early age and maybe get loaned out elsewhere and things don't pan out for him. He's got a huge ceiling. He can be that guy. But right now, this is Matt Turner's to lose. But if anybody could take it away for 2026, it is Gagas Lonin because of that ceiling.
Gagas Lonin will be 22,
yeah,
is that right,
yeah,
in 2026?
Yes.
Is that too young for like a number one goalie with the U.S.?
I mean, look at these players who are in this World Cup.
Yeah, but
who have played and did well in this World Cup.
Don't we just say
himself a nice tournament. How old is he?
Yeah.
He turned
but
20
goalies,
in the tournament.
Don't you? Is experience more valuable at the goalie position?
How much does Matt Turner have in terms of experience?
Well, a lot more than Gagas Lonin does. And by 2026, he'll have a whole lot more, right?
You know, I'm going to sit here and repeat that this is a young man's game. And I know that it doesn't, that doesn't apply to the goalkeeper per se, because physically that's not what we're talking about. But there's something to be said about giving your goalkeeper confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the age is. And we talk about being naive in a good way and in a bad way, positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a situation where Gagas Lonin has the talent. It could be a great situation for him. I think he's taking his lumps right now. And he may take him at the international level as well.
Yeah.
But it is part of the process.
Yeah, I mean, and bottom line, if somehow in 3 or 4 years he's played himself into a starting job at Chelsea, it's going to be hard for anybody, Matt Turner included, to keep him off the field, right? I think that's pretty obvious. So we've talked about Matt Turner. How does he compare to the other goalies that we've seen from CONCACAF throughout the World Cup? Well, some great work from our statistics
department. How does this work,
here.
Seb? How does this work?
Listen, man, I'm not going to lie to you. I am not a math major. But what I can tell you is that does not look good for Keylor Navas. 11 goals conceded. And Matt Turner, Herc, by far the best save percentage of the bunch. So credit to the American number one there.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, it's the quarterfinal everybody's talking about. England versus France, set to go down next Saturday. The odds makers have France as your favorites. However, the computers tell a very different story. The SPI is saying England are your favorites. Who better to help us break this down than a couple colleagues who have become much more than that over the last week.
Sentimental he's getting.
Nader Manua and Julien Laurent. You see them all the time on ESPN FC. We brought them gifts here on Football Americas. Scarves that they, I'm sure, will proudly wear throughout Doha. And guys,
Sebi to sign that for you before.
Great to have you here on the show, man.
Thank you, finally, to get an invitation. Thank you.
Please, I mean,
we waited 3 weeks.
No? He must have been on before.
He's been on actually
5 years ago when André-Pierre Gignac signed for Tigres.
That's right. It was we were doing a. Right. Tovan,
have
right?
you been on Gavin Jules?
No, I have not. Have you been on Gavin Jules?
Here we go.
There it is.
You've sure been on it.
Yeah, I've been on just a week ago, I think it was.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's good. Third time's a charm, though.
So there it is. All right, so we just saw there's some debate there between the computers and the odds makers, right? So who's the favorite for you, Jules? France or England?
I think the easy answer is 50-50, but I still think this England team has a slight edge over the French simply because the danger can come from everywhere. Whereas France, which is not a bad thing, that's not what I'm saying, but is very dependent on Kylian Mbappe and his talent. And I think that dependence on Mbappe could work fine and there's no problem. But the day he's on, he's having an off day. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how the rest of the team reacts.
Does he have off days?
Yeah, I mean, he's got 5 goals, 2 assists right now.
Yeah, but there will be a point where he will have an off day. I don't know if he can win this on his own, pretty much. However, for England, you've got Saka, you've got Kane, you've got Foden, you've got Bellingham. He can come from everywhere, more than the French. That's why I give them like a 55 to 45 chance.
Really?
For who? For England?
Yeah. Is he hedging his bets here?
Do you know, it's the emotional one. You try and say, well, this is my opinion, but if it's wrong, I'm more than happy to be happy.
Ah, no!
That's what he's going for.
The emotional hedge. It's true. It's
I'm
true.
Objective. That's no, how,
well,
that's
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But I do like it because I think it's sort of being fair. I think there's some people who don't like England, but he's actually calling what he's seen as opposed to what he kind of feels. Mm-hmm. But then the opposite is also true for people in England who are very down on their team, like, oh, but France, they're going to do this. But I think when they look at France, they're more so playing the brand name as opposed to the team that's there now. We all know Mbappe is one of the best players in the world, and he's a huge threat. But man for man, if you were to do like a best or like a combined 11, it's probably not going as much France as, say, some people would think, because they are a good side, but so are England, like Jules has just said. Yeah.
All right, well, England's a very good side, and they're very deep. Like, that's probably they're probably the deepest team in this competition. But I also saw them struggle. I mean, Iran crossed the field 3 times. They scored twice against the U.S. I saw the U.S. really take it to this English team and almost make them pay for it. Against Senegal, if not for Pickford, you're talking 0-2 before the 32nd minute.
So you're saying he did his job?
Pickford, but what I'm telling you is it's a very deep team, but they have their weaknesses too. Yeah. And you were saying, Kylian Mbappe, a lot rides on him, but he can surely make this English team pay.
Yeah, the only problem is there will be an anti-Mbappe plan. Whether that's Walker on his own, whether you put Stones with that, whether you put Saka or Henderson or whoever, or them three together, there will be something to block him and to stop him, which is fine, absolutely fine. And he might be good enough to still, even against the plan against him, manage to score another goal or do something special. The problem is, I think the others are too reliant on him, in the sense that, and we saw it, but there was something that Deschamps said to the boys before the game against Poland. He said, give the ball to Kylian. The instruction is very much, give him the ball. Give him the ball all the time. You have the ball, give him the ball. So whether you're Upamecano or Koundé or Rabiot or Dembele, the ball has to go to Kylian, which I think at some point could be counterproductive. Mm. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I know where you're coming from. But then he's obviously one of the best players in the world, so you kind of do want to get it to him.
Yeah. Right.
But it, you know, in regards to the story you had about, say, England playing in this and doing that, struggling against this team and that team, I think one thing to note is that those teams aren't still here anymore, so they've still managed to get past them in whatever way that they've done it. And I think they did have a poor performance within there, but there were positives that came within it. Like in the USA game, I thought defensively they ended up being quite good. I think in the Iran game, they did concede those 2 goals, but they did score 6. So for every negative, you can find a positive. And depending on your perspective, you know, you get to pick and choose which one matters the most to you.
It sounds like you're saying that there's some pessimism back in England.
Oh, 1,000%.
Around this. Yeah. What about in France? It's the defending World Cup champions. Do they see this? Do your colleagues, do the people back home in France, do they see France as clear favorites here, or is there some shared pessimism on that side?
No, there's no pessimism on our side. They're not too scared about England because there's Mbappe.
Right.
And again, all the chat today on French radio, for example, was like, oh, are the English scared of Kylian? This is all they cared about was, are they scared of Kylian? How much are they scared of Kylian? And do you think they can stop Kylian? This is going to be like that until Saturday. What kind of plan do they have against Kylian? What are they going to do against Kylian? This is it. And I think the French believe right now, and maybe rightly so, like the Argentine believe with Messi, that just nothing can happen to us because Kylian is there.
So, go ahead. I was just saying, my only worry for the French is we saw them in group play. They played a very underwhelming Australia. They played a very underwhelming Denmark team. That was supposed to be a favorite for me.
A dark horse.
Right? That ended up not being that. They rested players against Tunisia, so let's take that one out. But then they play against Poland. That was easily, for my money, the second worst European team here in this competition. So has the competition been good enough to really test France, is my only worry.
No, I think you're right. I think if you take Upamecano, for example, who has had a good season with Bayern, who is very promising, and his partnership with Varane could be very interesting because they complement each other well. And I think he benefits from the experience from Varane, and Varane benefits from the legs and the pace and the solidness of Upamecano. But then Lewandowski was easy to defend against the other night, and so was Zielinski. And Harry Kane would be a completely different kind of guy to defend on because he drops all the time, because he's so intelligent and so clever that you, do I go, do I stay? And I think they would have to be on their toes. So you're right. I think if you look at the fullbacks, which is probably the biggest weakness that we have right now, Koundé, especially Koundé on the right-hand side. Theo on the left is different because he's so attacking-minded that it might actually be useful against Saka because he might pin Saka down because Saka will have to follow him everywhere. But for Koundé, I'm worried. And then for Upamecano and Varane, I don't know how they will defend on Kane and how effective they can be on Kane.
I want to get into some of the specific matchups, but where do you think England can hurt France?
I think it's what he said, you know, spending lots of time with Julian, you get an understanding of the French team and sort of the way that he feels about it. Because from, you know, from an English perspective, people say France are the best thing that's ever existed ever, but they haven't also watched the games. But it's, oh, you know, they're great. What's great about them? Well, you know, the way that they do the thing and, like, they don't know what they're talking about.
Right, it's Mbappe.
Exactly, yeah, it's Mbappe. That's the obvious thing. But Julian, he sort of explains it more and you look for it more. And you start to see some of the weaknesses. And I think there are lots of sides within this who aren't perfect. But it's just a case of, you know, on a particular day, how do the matchups work, whether it's individual ones or collective? And I think that's going to be the big difference when you go out into the knockout rounds like this.
Who are you taking, Seb? You're taking Tchouaméni, Rabiot, and Griezmann? Are you taking Bellingham, Rice? You're taking...
It's a tough one. And to your point...
Because that midfield, to me, I think is the key there.
Well, to your point about the best 11, like, Bellingham, to me, is the only one that's... there's a gap, that he's like an obvious... If you're doing a combined 11, he's obvious. The other midfielders, like, take your choice, right? They're all pretty much the same level.
I think Rice, for me, is world-class. I have to say, the Rice-Bellingham partnership is...
Really?
Yeah.
So two of the three, then, are all three... You know, two of the three are English, if we're doing a best 11 in the midfield.
And then I've got either Rabiot or Griezmann to bring in.
Rabiot's been playing
He's
very
got Jordan
well.
Henderson because they're brothers.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
That's fine.
I pick my brothers, too, when we do combined 11.
Of course. And you picked Senegal as well, didn't you? But we don't need to get into that.
Yeah, because my boys say that, so it's fine. It's fine. The thing with Griezmann, and it's one of the other keys, is that this is a new position for him, that number 8. Mm-hmm. He's been doing really, really well against kind of weaker opposition. Can he influence the game against England, against that midfield, the way that he did against Denmark, the way he did against Poland? He won't have the same freedom. Will he still be able to play one touch, two touches there?
What do you mean he won't have the same freedom? What do you mean by that?
Because I think that I would expect Southgate and the staff and the team to have seen that he's such a key player for us. Mm-hmm. And I think for Poland, for example, I think Krychowiak at his age just could not keep up, could not follow everywhere. Okay. And we watched him the other day with Nadem, and we were fascinated by the movement and the intelligence that he has, as well as the work rate and the touch, etc.
He's clearing balls out of the box.
He's a different player for France.
Yeah. He's a completely different player. And I love what Rabiot has been doing because he compensates for Kylian so much. He's got such a key role to play in that team because Kylian never defends. So Rabiot has to come and do that job and on top of everything else. And he's been great. So I don't know who'd be my third be, but maybe Rabiot.
Yep. All right, let's do a comparison here. We talked about this on Revista Mundialista last night. One of the things that might define this match is the goalie position. Lloris, Pickford, they're both... I feel like they have a catastrophe in them.
You're really low on both. I'm not as low on both.
Okay, that's fair enough. We have that discussion. Which goalie makes you more nervous? If you can take off
you go first.
So you were for me.
Who do you have more confidence in? If you had to pick a team to win a game, who are you going with?
I think they do things differently. I think Pickford might make a mistake with his feet, whereas I think Lloris might make a mistake with his hands, if that makes sense. I think I could see Lloris conceding like a really weird goal where sometimes you think he's going to save it and save it well, but he might not necessarily do that. Whereas for Pickford, he's going to, at worst, overplay. He's going to try and do something he shouldn't do and put more pressure on his team or make the wrong decision that way. But in terms of shot stopping and stuff, like, I think I prefer Pickford.
Okay.
But then you look at Lloris, he's lifted the World Cup. You know, he's been very successful with France. So he's clearly got something and they do trust him. But I don't think everyone is as confident in Lloris as, say, people would think, if you know what I mean.
What's the vibe back in France on Lloris?
There's a lot of respect in this game, which is, I think, the destiny is there somewhere because he's going to beat the record of the most capped player in French football history against England, where he's been playing for 10 years, where his children, well, two of the three children were born.
Oh, yeah, there we go. The English kid.
My boy, so I'm going to pick the experience, of course,
right.
And my boy.
English kids as well, yeah? You? You've got English kids as well?
Born in London.
So you want them to play for England in the future, yeah?
Now we're really getting
I want them to win the World Cup, so they go.
Oh, there we go!
I'm here all week.
There we go.
I am here all week.
Okay, so we've played football together a little bit. You're an attacking player. You're very much a defender.
I'm a two-way player.
You're, okay, you're very
I
much.
I love that expression.
Your professional career was spent as a defender.
Yep.
So how do you approach dealing with Mbappe?
So I think in terms of Mbappe, if he's at his best, the matchup is not impossible, but it's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And you try and make it as hard as possible because he's quicker than most people. He has the skill to be able to manipulate the ball. He's a great finisher. But the thing that makes him even harder to play against is when he gets support from maybe Griezmann going across, maybe Hernandez coming across to support, maybe Rabiot coming across. So you need to try and figure out with your team to make sure that, firstly, nobody's isolated with him. But the worst case scenario should be that somehow there's now 2v1 against them. Like, can you go and support him as a midfielder? Really try and put him off. But then I think in fairness to Mbappe, he's very good at looking for 1-2s and things like that. But they might not necessarily come from Giroud in the middle. So I think you try and make him predictable. You don't try and encourage him to sort of have space to run in behind. And you don't say, like, in fairness to Kyle Walker, for as good as he is, I've seen times where he wants someone to race him. In this instance, don't encourage the race. Just do not do it. Like, you might do well 9 times, but on that 10th time, that could be the difference between being in the semifinals and just losing in the quarters.
Jules, do you see this more as a matchup of a Kyle Walker versus Kylian Mbappe, or do you see more Kylian looking at the center back saying, I could exploit this?
So this is very interesting, and I wonder if Deschamps might try to tweak something. But he starts on the left so much that he will have to go past Walker first before getting to Stones. Even I don't see him really coming inside to be facing either Maguire or Stones. So it will be Walker first. And we were talking about Matic. Matic had a good game against Kylian.
Yeah,
he had a good game.
Yeah.
And Kylian scored 2 and assisted 1. So this is, I think, what. As a defender, you must face, and you're thinking like, okay, I know. And I think if Walker defends on his own against Kylian, he might have 90% of a very good game. But the 10% where he's maybe not so good, Kylian will score 2.
Matty Cash got a nice collection of jerseys right now.
Yeah, true.
Who has the edge in the technical area, France or England?
I think in a game like this, Deschamps has to be the pick because of the experience, because of the fact that he's been there before, because that he's won those big games, and Southgate has won some, but has also lost a semi-final of the World Cup, mm-hmm. a final of the Euros. Deschamps lost the final of the Euros too, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I would still go for the experience.
Yeah, I would go with Deschamps, but I think Deschamps would be better if he had England's bench. I think for Southgate, he has more
the
options on there.
Stronger, yeah.
And in regards to the way England play, one thing they're doing differently in this tournament is they play with a back four, but they're also very comfortable going to a back three or turning into a back five. So if they're winning, they could revert to that. And if they're losing, they can bring on some of the best talent that's at this World Cup still that somehow isn't starting in the game.
What are the knocks against Southgate as a manager back home for you?
Just everything. Everybody hates him, hates suits, hate the way he speaks, you know, hate the teams that he picks. So aside from that, no, nothing. I think a lot of people believe that his football's too conservative, but I think there's a sort of sense of privilege that exists within English media, which I think misses the point, because for many, many people alive, they weren't really around that watch England take a real keen interest and speak about it. They weren't around in 1966 when they won the World Cup. Yet still, they speak as if that's something that should be expected every 4 years. But Southgate's delivered a semi-final appearance at a World Cup, which brings a lot of hope, and then delivered a final in the European Championships. And whether they played against this team, that team, and so on and so forth, teams gone by for England hadn't made it there before. So now that they're there, surely that means he's successful. Yet still, for some people say, yeah, but I want to see 5 goals, I want to see 6 goals. Well, how about just winning football?
Nathan, we use the word fracaso a lot here on this show, which means failure.
Yeah.
Would it be a failure for England to lose to this English team in this round?
So the French team, it depends how they do it. I think because some people now live and die by style of play, you know, they would be really upset if England didn't show up in that game. And I think they want to blame the manager. But one thing I've seen across the recent years is that there are certain teams and players who arrive in big moments and they want to play well, but they can't because they don't know how to play well in that time. You know, that's what we saw with England in the Euros final last summer. And for as good as they were in terms of getting there and taking the lead, once they had the lead, they didn't know how to manage it. So I think for this game here against the French side, who have won it before, I think they're going to need to know how to manage that situation. Should they take the lead or not panic? Should they go behind? So I think it will be perceived as a failure if they don't play the right way. But if they go toe-to-toe with the French side and they end up losing, I think the nation overall will be proud. And they'll take a positive away from it that, you know, the future is bright for the nation.
You mentioned the doubts about Southgate. Are there any doubts about Deschamps in France?
Yes, in the sense that this could be his last tournament, and we don't really know what happens next. And we discussed that the other day together, which is a bit of a. This is not. I don't think this is where Deschamps wants to be. He likes when everything is planned and he knows where he's going to be in 2 weeks' time or 3 weeks' time. Now he doesn't know, which could work in his favor because he could say, okay, this is my last competition, and we want to finish on a high, and the players can give that to him. That sort of things. There were always doubts, even when they won it 4 years ago, because they were not playing nice football enough, because of all the talent that he had. Now people are saying that he relies too much on Kylian, all that kind of stuff. So he knows that, but he's used to it. He's strong enough to be able to cope with it and don't feel that kind of pressure. And he knows that it will be over after the World Cup if they lose to England, for example, because the objective set by the federation before we came here was a semi-final at the minimum, at least.
Even with all the injuries.
Even with all the injuries. And that was, I mean, mind you, that was before we lost Benzema. But it will still be the same objective now, and especially when you're already in the quarterfinals. So he will see this as like, okay, the objective is to go all the way anyway. So if I don't beat England, then I would have, my fracasso is there. I would have failed.
We mentioned it on this show, but I think we botched it. What's the French word for fracasso?
Failite. Surely you would remember.
I know, but I want to hear you pronounce it because I botched it. I botched the pronunciation.
So you've got échec, an échec, like the chess game, échec, or faillite. More than fracasso, yeah.
Okay, so it would be a faillite if they go out here, like a big faillite.
I think so.
Let's get some predictions. What do you think?
I said 1-0 to England yesterday on the show with Nadim.
He's lost his mind.
That's
by the way.
Emotional hedge sure. 100%.
Listen.
Why?
No, I'm worried. I'm really worried by this England side. I have to be honest. I'm worried about Kane. I'm worried about Saka and Foden. I'm worried about the Serbs, especially, more than anything else. Because if he brings Rashford after an hour, if Sterling is back, or Grealish, or Maddison, or he's got all those options. And I don't like Southgate. I don't think he's good. I don't trust him. But still, if you throw all those players in, they might do something special. So I'm a bit worried. I've got trust in my boys, but I'm a bit worried. That's why I think a 1-0 England win is not a bad shot at all.
Nadim?
Yeah, I hate doing predictions because I always end up being wrong. Because I go for something that I actually believe will happen and I want to happen. You know, I felt like I went quite big on the USA.
Yeah, you did.
Because I fully believed it.
Yeah, you did.
That's literally the definition of drinking the Kool-Aid. I was like, no, this is it. They've got it. But in this game, I liked what I saw from England after they sort of changed their tactical approach yesterday in the game against Senegal. So hopefully if they're focused, they're ready, they look a better side than, say, they have done in the previous two tournaments in terms of managing the moment. So I'm going to lean that way and I'm going to say England are going to win, but I'm not going to go for the chuck and guarantee it. I'm just going to say I think England are going to win.
All right, very serious footballing discussion here.
Yes.
Let's talk about some memes.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Because I don't know if you guys know, these guys are always on ESPN FC. It's for a much older audience, right? I think mainly you see that with the host, Dan Thomas. Of course, much older than the host here on this show. So we're doing World Cup memes. How big is this in France right now?
Massive. That photo went viral everywhere. Literally memes on Bade. The loving. Let's not forget that before the Euros.
Kirk's favorite movie, The Notebook.
They were hating each other because Giroud said, when I make the runs, the ball doesn't come, and he didn't name Kylian, but everybody knew he was talking about Kylian.
Actually, Kylian wanted that ball back. He was trying to get that ball back.
Yeah, it was
Giroud who just said, no, I'm taking it myself.
And now they love each other. The Notebook is a good one.
Nadim, this is probably big back home.
It's very, very big, yeah. Because he's trying to recruit him to go to Liverpool as well. But yeah, the one underneath, that is. That's a very good perspective. And I think Jordan's maybe a little better looking than that, but we'll see.
Jordan Henderson, Jude Bellingham there as England won 3-0 over Senegal. All right, we got some transfer news here, potential transfer news. Cristiano Ronaldo, there are reports he's close to joining Saudi club Al Nassr next year on a 2-year deal, guys, worth, get this, 200 million euros per season. If this does come to pass, is it a disappointing end to an amazing club career?
100%. I don't understand this. I have to say, it can't be about the money because the guy has earned a billion already.
That's half a billion right there.
I know, but why are you going? So you're going for half a billion?
Well, that's the only reason
he's going. This is where he's gone now. This is where he is now? Really? This is where his career is?
Especially with all the sponsorships and everything, like, beyond the football, he's made tons.
He's a purist at heart. Yeah, right?
This is why I don't. It really winds me up, by the way, that he's going to go there.
Yeah, he's a purist.
I just don't understand.
Guy.
I don't understand it. next thing he would say, like, oh, yeah, I want to win the Asian Champions League, because so I can be the first one to win the Asian Champions League and the normal Champions League, and maybe then he can win the CONCACAF one. I just don't get it.
But what is there not to understand? You said $1 billion in his career. That's half of what he's earned in his career for two
he's
and a half seasons.
He's 38 in February, right?
Right.
When you were 30, well, okay.
I'm 38 right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you were 38, what were you doing with your life?
Okay. In the last month of your career, right. You wanted to enjoy your football, right?
Right.
He's not going to enjoy the Saudi League. I can tell you right now.
Where would he go that he'd enjoy, though?
But go back to Sporting. Say to Sporting,
that's what most players do. Like, I took a pay cut to come back to the Major League Soccer to end my career. Like, that's what most players do. But most don't have that option where you get paid more than you've ever been paid. And it's very easy to say, well, he's got enough money.
Does Sporting want him?
Yeah, it's another thing.
We heard Ruben Amorim after the Tottenham game when he said, like, we could not afford him, which I think meant like we would have taken him, but not at the price.
Do you not think he could be making an excuse there, though? Because surely most of these big teams are trying to build projects that last for longer than 2 years.
This is also just a report. This isn't official. So honestly, part of me feels, you know that Apple just purchased the Major League Soccer broadcast rights. Mm-hmm. And Apple needs to go in. Major League Soccer needs to go in big for a superstar next season. There's talks about Lionel Messi. I honestly feel like he's bargaining right here. He is using leverage right here for something like that or somewhere else. Because if you got that in your back pocket, you say, hey, I want something big. I could change the game for you. Mm. $200 million a season for two and a half seasons, that's $500 million.
No, I know. Seeing
Ronaldo in Minnesota then, yeah.
Now you know exactly where he'd go.
Is it crazy to suggest this? But I feel like even we saw it in the last transfer window, it's down, even as great a player as he is, to a lack of options. Like, if he goes to Saudi Arabia, it's because nobody else wants him. And that's where I think we feel kind of disappointed and sad that you could have this great career and there's nowhere for you to play other than Saudi Arabia.
No, there will be somewhere that you can play, but it is essentially a white elephant now for the amount of money it will probably take for him to come to your club.
You see what he's doing right there. Nobody wants him. No. Yeah, well, nobody wants him at the rate he wants.
Exactly. Yeah. And then to make it worse, if you do have this war chest of money, do you want to give all that to a 38-year-old? If you're literally trying to build success for your club long term, whether it's Ronaldo or somebody else, buying somebody at that age and spending that money financially doesn't add up. So it's unfortunate for him because he's as good as he is, but this is the situation he's in right now. It's got nothing to do, in my opinion, between what happened at Man United in terms of how he left. It's just literally, look at the stats. It's a 38-year-old guy that costs this amount of money. Can you afford to bring me to your football club financially and just from a thought standpoint? Well, the answer is probably going to be no.
Yeah. For me, it's just very clear the difference between Messi and Ronaldo, right? Messi, if he does end up in Miami, that's where he wants to be. That's like him choosing. It sounds here like maybe Ronaldo doesn't have the options. Those guys would never fit in our pickup game. I tell you that. Yeah, I tell you that much. I understand we have some video.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if it's El Trashico 1.0 or El Trashico 2.0, but I've had the privilege to play with both Jules and Natum, and it's been a lot of fun. I mean, other than the heat.
It's the original.
Are you talking?
This is just a warm-up. I think the first thing we need to point out is my three-quarters pants.
Yeah.
You weren't a big fan of those?
Yeah.
Gave him the hips.
Don't miss. Oh, no.
Oh, that left foot. That left foot is wrong.
No. I was just getting warm. Let's not worry about that.
Adam, how would you describe Jules'
Jules, what a finish.
The ball was behind me.
That was a ball from me, by the way. Saved from Mike Rodriguez.
Which one of you two is a trash talker?
It's him. He was getting angry with me the other day in the game we're playing against each other. I was thinking, my guy, just settle down.
Look at the body.
Okay, goal.
Go. I don't know why we kept that.
There's no such.
By the way, you guys are crazy. It's like 100-something degrees in the morning.
Yeah, you know.
What are you doing?
This is just what we do. It's what we do. But it's good fun.
It was good fun.
Yeah, played
who
a few
won
times.
Again? Oh, our team won.
That's right.
Yeah, brother.
That's fine. Maybe you can have a career. Maybe you can have a career. There's still time.
You guys are enjoying yourself. I was working, man.
Oh, you were working? Sorry.
You were sleeping more like.
Yeah.
Natum, how would you describe my game?
In fairness, as the quality of opposition rose, I think you got better.
I was impressed by you against the Swiss because we also played against a Swiss journalist and Johan Giroud, the former Arsenal.
And there were a few ex-players in there. And to be fair, Sebi Fitton, he was good.
Did he? Can I just tell you, Seb, anytime anybody says in fairness.
I know. That was a big caveat there.
Sebi was good. It's just weird. When he was walking up, I was thinking, I wonder what they'll think about us. You know, I look how I look.
By looking at him.
It was because he had the three-quarter like short trousers. tons of things on. And I thought, they must think he's a referee. Like,
oh my God. Because you told him about, you know, they didn't look good. He changed just before.
So I did. I played in shorts.
Yeah, but then he looked good and he played well.
I've only seen Sebi play once and it was very small-sided. What are Sebi's traits?
He's a good organizer.
Okay.
He tries to make good movements. Understands the right.
Understands
the right times to go to the right sort of areas. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say he's physically really there as a.
Hold up!
Really?
I wasn't the only one that was getting bodied by Nathan yesterday.
But in fairness,
he likes to foul a lot. To be fair,
he's stronger than us.
But in fairness, he's good. He's a good team player. He's
good finisher as well. He had some good finishes.
He missed a couple of plays.
You've played with the majority of the guys at ESPN. Who's the best?
Of the I mean, Nadim's obviously we take him out, right?
Who's the best?
Jules.
No. Everybody, ex players involved. Who's the best one you've played with?
Nadim.
Come on, like, you know.
He's loving that.
Can you look at the camera for Ali Moreno? Because he's gonna hate you.
Ali already hates me.
It's me, easily me.
All right, guys. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Great to have you here with us on Football Americas. Enjoy those scarves. Here's a statistical representation of Cristiano Ronaldo's decline over the last few years as we take a look at the numbers there for CR7. What will be next for surely a player many consider among the greatest of all time? We'll see what's next for him, what's next for us here on Football Americas. Here's a check-in on today's action. We'll start with Brazil and South Korea. Went down at Stadium 974. This one, Herc, over before it began, you might say.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I may have streamed it in some sort of unsavory way on my walk over here. Uh-huh. And I was watching, and it was 2-0, and they were balling. Joga Bonito is back. Richarlison, which we could easily say are probably two of the goals of the tournament, top two goals for my money off of his name. Neymar, any fitness doubts you may have had? They're gone.
So Vinny Jr. scored the first in the 7th minute. The aforementioned Neymar scoring from the penalty spot in the 13th. Richarlison finishing off a golazo right before the half-hour mark. And Lucas Paquetá then scoring in the 35th minute as Brazil went up 4-0. Park, the number 8 for Korea, scoring a late goal, 76th minute, as that game ends 4-1. Yesterday, man, I got to see him live. I said, boy, France is the best I've seen yet. Did Brazil surpass them for you tonight?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. So Chicha is so good at the way he organizes his team. Everybody sees this offensive flair. They see Neymar, they see Vini Jr., they see Rafinha. You know, they see any player that can come off the bench. And you're thinking, Joga Bonito, offensive flair. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, this is what they're going to overwhelm you offensively. But they're so good in the back. They are so good in the center of the midfield, Casemiro. The way they defend, it's a defend-first mentality for Brazil. And teams like that go far in World Cups, go far in tournament settings. I don't even think they've scratched the surface.
How much of this was down to the competition?
That's a lot.
I think if we talk about the teams that did advance to the round of 16, you would consider South Korea not just one of the weaker sides, but also one of the teams that has shown us the least to get through.
And probably fortunate to be in the second round because of the way they went on.
Them and Poland feels very similar.
Well, Poland, very similar, but I think South Korea is showing me a lot more than Poland. Okay. What I'm telling you is their fortunes changed in a matter of minutes. I mean, it's literally they're playing against a Portuguese team that had nothing to play for. They were already into the second round. It's a late set piece, literally last play of the game type deal. It's Song versus 8 Portuguese players, slips the ball. Megs one player, great through ball, goal, and everything changes. It's Uruguay out, right?
Yep.
It's South Korea in. And it's a team that's already depleted, a team that's already at half gas, that maybe felt fortunate enough to be there against one of the tournament favorites, and easily, for my money, the best team in the world.
So in this game, we see Neymar's return. He missed the second and third game after coming off injured in the first. Was he the difference? Are you putting down the fact that we saw Brazil go from group phase Brazil to knockout round Brazil just down to Neymar?
No. Listen, Brazil's group wasn't easy.
Right.
You talk about France, and you didn't say, hey, what about their opponents? With France, right? I was the one that mentioned
it. Well, I'm speaking of the opponents, I'm specifically talking about South Korea today.
No, fair. But what I'm talking about when you talk favorites is, like, nobody's really brought up the fact that France has played Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
France has played a very poor
Denmark
team. And then Tunisia. So, and then in the second round, Poland.
Yep.
But you have to respect Brazil. You have to respect them for their history. You have to respect them for the way they went through World Cup qualifiers. You have to respect them for that ridiculous amount of games they have
undefeated with Casemiro in that lineup. They're a very good team, very well-coached team, organized, and they've got world-class players. Yesterday, you and I had the discussion about, can the U.S. ever win a World Cup, right?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Name me a team that's won a World Cup without world-class players.
I can't. Yeah, of course.
You can't. Yeah. And Brazil has, they check off every single box you can think of why they should win a World Cup.
So I was at their first game against Serbia.
We were there together.
Yes. It feels like 3 months ago. I don't even remember who was there. And Neymar didn't shine in that game.
He was bad.
You would say you would go that. So to me, it's like he's definitely not the reason that they peaked today. Yeah. Let's say, and I'm not kind of just speculating out of turn here. I feel like his health is always an issue, right?
It's always in question.
One, I think there's it's fair to say he's a bit fragile. He's also targeted a lot, right? He draws a lot of fouls. If for some reason he were to miss a critical game, would you bank on Brazil to do it without him?
I think I'd still. It depends who they're playing.
Of course,
but I think I'd still be.
But you know, from now on, it's going to be a tough matchup, right?
Sure. Croatia's not going to be an easy team. Mm-hmm. They've proved.
And then it would be potentially Argentina or Netherlands.
It would be potentially Argentina, which would be a grudge match for them. That'd be a very difficult game, very physical game. Also, Mauricio Amaya gave us a stat yesterday on ESPN Deportes. Neymar has missed over 200 days with ankle issues throughout his career. That's an ankle issue he's got currently right now. I'm sure within those 200 days, Brazil has needed to fare without him. I'm fairly confident because of their approach and the way they play that they can get by without him. But Neymar, when he's running at an optimal level, is easily, for my money, one of the best players in the world. Maybe the best player in this tournament. I know Kylian Mbappe, everybody's high on him right now, and I love him as well. But Neymar is a different level of player than we're used to seeing.
All right, let's get to the earlier game from today. Japan against Croatia in the round of 16. This one going down at Al Janoub Stadium. Not nearly as exciting, I think it's safe to say, at least overall. First half was pretty good as Brazil's game against South Korea. Daisen Maeda opened the scoring for Japan in the 43rd minute. Ivan Perisic leveling in the 55th. It went to penalties, and from there, Dominik Livaković, the 27-year-old, writing himself into Croatian footballing folklore as Croatia takes the penalty shootout 3-1, advancing to the quarterfinals. So Croatia advance, but they don't win. Are you buying them as a threat to advance deeper in this tournament, a la 2018 when they reached the final?
You know, I thought they would be physically overmatched already versus a pair of teams. I thought Canada would physically overmatch them. Was not the case. Canada had their own issues of being physically overmatched versus Croatia. I thought Japan would overwhelm them with that press. And early on in this game, they were doing that. Livaković comes up big in the penalty kicks. It's 120 minutes more for this team.
I think
it's going to be very difficult against a Brazil team that was at half gas come the second half of this game, who also had the luxury of resting players versus Cameroon. They made 9 changes versus Cameroon. They made changes in the second half of this game. Dani Alves comes on again. This is a Brazilian team that's not only full of confidence, but also well-rested versus a very depleted Croatian team that had a lot of fight in them. And that fight took a lot of that tank. They did a lot more than I thought they would do against Japan, to be quite honest. And they really overperformed how I thought they would do in this group phase, but I can't see them weathering that Brazilian storm.
I agree with you. I think they're good, very good, because they get past the teams they're supposed to get past, you might say. But when they hit that elite level, and I think you could say they came out of the weaker side of the bracket in 2018. Sure. If we go back to the Euros, when they had to go up against Spain, you know, we saw them kind of hit their level. And then I think, as you point out, what's coming next is a level that they have not seen. And I think that's where they
probably
get
Modric, arguably the most important player, is 37 years old. And minute 98, he comes out. So you have to wonder where they're at physically. And I just don't think that if it's a matchup versus Brazil, they have physically what it takes.
All right, let's take a look then at the updated bracket, as now 6 of the 8 quarterfinalists are set. We got 2 more round of 16 games to go tomorrow. Of course, Netherlands over the United States, Argentina over Australia. So Netherlands-Argentina on Friday. Oh, that should be a good one. Also on Friday, Croatia against Brazil. There you see it. According to the SPI, Brazil are big time favorites. All right, Football Americas will continue tomorrow. As you see right there, Rodrigo Faez, our good friend from ESPN Deportes, will join the show. We will be breaking down Spain against Morocco, as well as the other quarterfinal.
I'll take Morocco.
Portugal-Switzerland, other round of 16 match, as we get set to lock in all eight of the quarterfinalists here at the 2022 World Cup. For Hercules Gomez, producer Betao, the team in LA and Bristol and beyond, I'm Seb. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow on ESPN+.
Shout out Buzz Lightyear.